to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me today is Dane Osis. He's a park ranger at Fort Stevens State Park in Warrenton, Oregon, which is just where the Columbia River meets the Pacific Ocean, right? You're kind of bounded on those sides.
Yep, northwest tip of Oregon, basically.
Well, welcome, Dane. It's so great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be on the show.
And we're going to be talking about something that I am so fascinated by and also so terrified about because it's something I don't really know a lot about, and that is mushrooms and foraging for mushrooms. It is something that's so huge here in this region, in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, this is like a mushroom center of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're not alone in your, you know, curiosity about mushrooms. Where we live, we've got ideal habitat, you know, we've got abundant forest, abundant rainfall, mild climate. Those three things make for a lot of mushrooms. And basically people, you know, they see mushrooms coming up in their yards or the forest. They're curious about them. You know, they hear about mushroom foraging, want to get into it, but they're a little bit intimidated. You know, you read in the paper about someone that eats the wrong one, ends up in the hospital.
It is always on my mind. I don't know that I would ever be confident to eat a mushroom that I just wandered out and picked. But so how did you get interested in mushrooms? How did you start to find out about this? Because it's a complicated topic.
Yeah, so I've been at Fort Stevens for, this is my 20th year. And prior to that, I was a park ranger down at Harris Beach State Park down in Brookings. And I was looking for a program that I could do for the public kind of in the off season in the fall. Down there, there's even the whole Siskiyou National Forest. That's kind of the banana belt of Oregon, kind of a milder climate. And it's as many mushrooms as we have up here. Down there, it's just incredible. So I took some college classes at the local community college. I went and bought my commercial mushroom permit so I could go in the National Forest and pick as much as I wanted. And basically bought a bunch of books and just started studying. And then 20 plus years later, I'm still at it. You know, the thing with mushrooms, there's so many of them. Every year, you know, I learn something new. There's always something out there to learn and experience. So it's been a good way to kind of share that public, you know, with the outreach for the public, you know.
Absolutely. And I mean, I feel like every year I'm reading more and more about, you know, scientists discovering new fascinating aspects to mushrooms and, you know, like the mycelium network under the soil and how they connect to one another and how they work with the plants around them. It's just, I mean, they're fascinating. And it's an organism, right?
Yeah. So basically, when you see a mushroom, you're just seeing part of the organism.
Yeah.
So it's basically the fruit of the fungus.
Yeah.
You can use kind of the analogy of like apples on a tree. So your apples are your mushrooms. You know, instead of having seeds, they have spores that they release out. Your tree, so to speak, is what's called mycelium. So it's like white, thready substance that's in the soil or you know, in a dead log or something. That's there all the time, basically. When the conditions are favorable, usually after we get some rainfall, then they start producing these different mushrooms. So that's basically, it's the fruit of the fungus is what you're seeing when you're seeing a mushroom out there.
And that's why it's tied to certain times of year, because that's when the conditions are right.
Usually,
much like an apple on a tree. I mean, it doesn't fruit year-round.
I mean, different mushrooms have different seasons, just like vegetables, you know.
Yeah.
Here on the North Coast, our season is generally starts in late summer, you know, August. And it usually stretches through until, you know, November, December, once we start getting hard frosts and cooler weather. Other parts of the state, springtime is really good. Unfortunately, on the coast here, about the only thing you find in the spring is like oyster mushrooms. We don't get the choice morels that a lot of people like to harvest. Where I used to live down in Brookings, it would be all winter long you would have mushrooms. So it really kind of depends on the climate, what type of trees you have. And really a lot of mushrooms, you know, having some knowledge of what types of trees, tree identification, that sort of thing can come in handy because they really associate with certain species of trees, how they interact in the forest.
Really? So certain mushrooms will you'll find them around a certain species of tree?
Can you
give me some examples?
Yeah, so fungi, they're not a plant, they're not an animal, they rely on another organism to get their nutrients. And so certain types like the chanterelle or the kingbolete, those are what we call mycorrhizal fungi. So they basically get their nutrients, their proteins, their sugars from certain types of trees. So chanterelles, for instance, they like conifers, Douglas fir, hemlock, that sort of thing. The porcini or kingbolete, they like, around our area, it's mostly like Sitka spruce and shore pine. And so the mushroom needs that tree in order to get its nutrients. It you know, and in exchange, the mycelium will actually exchange nutrients and moisture through the forest, and it's in the beneficial, it's to the benefit of the tree. So it's kind of like a symbiotic mutual relationship that they have going on. And it's one of the reasons why some of these mycorrhizal fungi are so choice and so sought after. You know, I've seen chanterelles for sale in markets for, you know, asking $30, $40 a pound. And then right next to them are your cremini or pizza mushroom, you know.
Yeah.
Those are what we call saprophytic fungi. So they're decomposers, essentially. They can be easily cultivated, grown on a farm, that sort of stuff. But the mycorrhizal ones, again, you have to have the tree in order to have the mushroom. So you're not going to...
So you can't cultivate
chanterelles or porcini or anything like that. They have to be hand-picked in the wild. That's why it adds to their, you know, they're only around a few months out of the year. That adds to their allure and their, and they taste really good too.
So there's
a reason why they're fetching such high prices in some of the markets.
But. It's, I mean, it is amazing. And I'm fascinated here by, I mean, I know chanterelles and I know boletes. I mean, those seem to be some of the most common ones around here, but there are so many. And I want to say, and I'll try and take a picture of this to show people, you know, online. Dane has this lovely array of mushrooms here in front of us, and I know because a friend just picked one on my farm today, a lobster mushroom, which is so wild. It's bright orange. It's the most amazing. So does that also grow on a specific tree, or is that...
So yeah, so lobsters are kind of like the third variety. You know, you have the decomposers, the saprophytic fungi. You have the mycorrhizal fungi that have the relationship with the trees. The third type are parasitic fungi. So they can be parasitic on a whole range of hosts. The lobsters in particular, the hypomyces fungus, is parasitic on other mushrooms. So the that there's a white gilled mushroom called the short-stem brucella is the common name for it. It's basically edible, but it's not really considered super tasty.
Okay. You know,
some people harvest it, but most people just leave it alone. What happens is that the hypomyces fungus or lobster fungus attacks the other mushroom, and it turns this, it looks like orange sandpaper basically. So the mushroom is there, it's just encrusted in another type of fungus, and it changes not only the color, the texture, but also the flavor. Lobster mushrooms are much more highly desired than the host mushroom, the Russula.
So it is a parasite. It basically just consumes the other mushroom. It like it completely encapsulates it and turns it into an entirely different mushroom.
Yeah, exactly.
That is so creepy, but also really cool. That's amazing. Is that what, so there's another one that I know of and people talk about a lot here, the chicken of the woods?
Yeah, chicken of the woods. So that's a saprophytic fungi. They're, you find them on like logs or stumps.
Not so much on a living tree, but on a tree that's decomposing.
Yeah, generally, they're found on dead logs.
Okay.
And just like what we mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, mushrooms have seasons.
Yeah.
So like the lobster and the chicken of the woods are very early season mushrooms. So they're some of the first ones you'll start finding sometimes in July, sometimes as early as July or August into September and then later on.
And then they stop... Because
then
they
kind of wind down the lobsters. Once we start getting heavy rains, they kind of don't hold up. I mean, you can still find them occasionally through like into November, but their season is generally more like August, September.
Okay. Yeah. I love that they all have seasons too. I mean, it's so fascinating. I mean, as a farmer, I'm used to plants having these like, well, this is when this comes on and this is when this comes on. And I hear people talking about mushrooms, you know, and it's always felt like this mysterious secret language that people have. It's like, oh, chanterelles, and whoa, have you hit your spot yet, and all this kind of stuff. So I do want to talk a little bit about that, because I feel like foraging, you know, especially for mushrooms, really kind of exploded in popularity in recent years. And I'm wondering kind of what you've been seeing here at the park and the impacts of that. And you know, I suppose, because I also hear this from some of my mushroom friends, a frustration with people who maybe aren't really well versed in kind of foraging etiquette. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that? And I know foraging within a state park is different than foraging out on private lands or other lands.
Yeah, so there's no shortcut in mushroom identification. You really want to look at all the characteristics and do your due diligence and knowing the regulations and the rules for mushrooming. It's kind of the same thing. Pretty much every land agency kind of has different rules. Some private lands allow it, some private lands don't. So you really want to do your homework before you go out mushroom hunting. In most Oregon state parks, we allow personal use picking. You don't need any kind of license, anything like that. You can harvest small quantities, up to a gallon per person per day. National forest, often you'll have to get a permit. A lot of times you'll have to cut the mushroom for personal use, because once it's cut, you cannot sell the mushroom.
Oh, interesting.
Fort Clatsop has their rules. So it's, again, it can be kind of confusing, but again, do your homework, figure out what the rules and the regulations are before you go. Again, harvesting mushrooms, generally speaking, just picking a mushroom, you're not really harming the organism. It's like picking the apples on your tree, you're picking berries, the mycelium's still intact. When you start disturbing the mycelium, so there's a certain mushroom out there that's pretty valuable commercially, the white matsutake.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that one.
The pine mushroom, yes. Yeah. Most of those, they're highly prized over in Japan and Asia. Most of the commercial market is shipped overseas. They develop kind of under kind of mossy conditions, and people will sometimes go and rake the moss to try to find the mushroom. That definitely damages mycelium. That's not a good thing. But the act of picking a mushroom is generally, I mean, if anything, you might be aiding in this spore dispersal. You know?
Okay. But if you're really roughing up the ground.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, pick only the mushrooms that you can use. I mean, you could get a big bag of boletes, bring them home. It's a lot of work to process them and dry mm-hmm. them and do what you're going to do with them. A lot of mushrooms will get buggy. So there's a small insect called the fungus gnat that lays its eggs in certain mushrooms. And those eggs hatch out to be essentially little larvae or little maggots. Mm-hmm. So I recommend pick only the young mushrooms that are in good condition. You know, this big buggy bolete you're not going to want anyways.
And is leaving the big buggy bolete a good thing? Because the spores are just going to be
there. Yeah, I mean, even if you picked it up and walked around, you're actually dropping spores as you go. So again, it's not necessarily, detrimental to the fungus or the mycelium. But my pet peeve is you go in the woods and people have kicked over all these, they didn't know what they were, so they just stepped on them or kicked them over, and it's like all these mushrooms are wasted So if you find mushrooms that you're not going to harvest, leave them for somebody else or leave them for others to enjoy. Obviously don't litter, park where you should be, follow the rules as much as you can. That way we can maintain, sustain, picking and harvesting and whatnot. So.
Well, and there's a sense too of like not picking all of the mushrooms in an area, like leave some.
Yeah. I mean, when I go out chanterelle picking, for instance, I'll pick the ones that are, the ones that are really old, I don't really want anyways. I'll leave those. The young little buttons that are just coming up, I'm going to leave those to get a little bit bigger and just kind of pick the medium sized ones. And again, just pick what you need, you can fill a bucket pretty quick sometimes on a good chanterelle year, but when you get home, that's when the real work begins. So only use what you can take and, share them with your neighbor or whatever, but it's a great resource that we have in the Northwest, and definitely take advantage of it. So
take advantage of it and take care of it.
Exactly.
That seems like a good combination and a good principle to approach with. Do you have a favorite?
I've got lots of favorites. I mean, I think whatever
or is it a time
season,
of year,
that's
season.
My favorite at the moment. I think my all-time favorite are probably morels, just because we don't really have them on the coast very often.
So you have to go far. You have to go far.
Yeah, they're
to get
a springtime mushroom. You have to kind of go up in the mountains usually to find them.
Yeah.
The first time I ever picked morels, it kind of ruined me because it was in 2004 and. they quite often will fruit after in abundance after a forest fire. Uh-huh. And so we had gone in, a friend of mine and I went in April of 2004 to the B&B complex fire by Camp Sherman. And when we arrived, they were actually opening the woods up that day. The woods had been closed because of the fire that whole time. And we were literally some of the first people that had set foot since they had opened the woods. And it was unreal. I mean, we in 3 days, you know, we went and got our commercial licenses really quick. And I think we picked 63 pounds in 3 days. And that was just scratching the surface, you know.
Wow.
And I've gone morel picking a lot after that, and I've never even come close to seeing that abundance. You know?
Was it something to do with the fire?
So, certain morels, you know, they call them burn morels, for whatever reason, I'm not sure exactly know why, but after a forest fire, they just, if the conditions are favorable, they just fruit by the thousand. And it was just like, as far as you could see, it was just morels popping up all over the place. There's, you know, chanterelles, bolets are obviously kind of, you go to mushrooms just because of the ones you find the most often.
Yeah.
Cauliflower mushroom, it kind of looks more like a bouquet of like egg noodles, basically.
Interesting.
It's mildly parasitic on like old growth trees. So a lot of times you'll see it growing on the, in like an old growth stump and kind of a second growth forest. And they can get quite large. The biggest one I've ever found was maybe 20 pounds. But I know someone that he actually came to one of my programs and saw a cauliflower mushroom on the table. And then it was in like November, and it was during elk season, and he was elk hunting. And he was like in a timber patch, and he saw what he thought was the rump of an elk. And it ended up being a 55-pound cauliflower. So
wow.
They can get incredibly large.
That is amazing. If you are just joining us, it may be obvious, but we're talking about mushrooms today here on In Season. I'm talking with Dane Osis. He's a park ranger at Fort Stephens State Park in Warrenton, Oregon. And we have some beautiful selections of mushrooms in front of us that Dane picked. And I'm looking at them. There's bolets and chanterelles, lobster mushrooms. What is this weird thing? I know this is not a visual medium, but it's this weird shiny brown thing.
Yeah, so that's what they call reishi. Or varnish conch is another common name for it. It's a saprophytic parasitic fungus that grows on trees.
Okay.
So it's basically like a shelf fungus.
I have seen that kind of thing.
It's kind of like a mahogany color, kind of reddish, and it's shiny. It looks like it's been, you know, painted.
It's been polished.
Like polished.
Yeah.
And that one is it's a really neat one. So it's not, so you can eat it when they're you can feel it's kind of softer than some of the woody conchs that you might be familiar with. So I think you can eat it, but mostly it's used as like a tincture. Like you can make medicinal uses out of it. So you basically dry it, and it will, you know, you have to soak it in some of some of it's water soluble, some of it's alcohol soluble. So you soak it in alcohol, then you soak it in, you know, basically steep it in water, and then you make a tincture out of it, and it can, reduces inflammation, can boost your immune system. There's a whole sort of world of medicinal mushrooms that you can utilize and get into. So
it is so fascinating to me. It's just such an array of different species. Do you get many people? Do you hear many people here like injuring themselves or not being smart about mushrooms? Because I mean, that's the thing that I worry about, because there are like, there's these beautiful chanterelles, but there's false chanterelles and there's bolets, but there's like false bolets. And sometimes the differences feel kind of subtle if you're just new to this. So, I mean, where do people around here learn? I mean, you offer programs.
Yeah. So you definitely, you really want to do your homework. I mean,
There's no shortcuts.
Yeah. You really need to learn the mushroom. If you plan on eating it, you should be as familiar with the mushroom as you are with like produce in a grocery aisle, right? There's a mushroom that's called the jack-o'-lantern. It's an orange mushroom. It's got true gills, so it's much more bladed. It grows on dead wood. It glows in the dark because
cool.
They call it a jack-o'-lantern. Every year someone picks it thinking it's a chanterelle, which are mycorrhizal, so they grow out of the ground. They've got more like blunt ridges. The flesh is white instead of orange. So really the only thing it has in common with a jack-o'-lantern is they're both orange mushrooms.
Okay.
So again, but every year someone eats a jack-o'-lantern thinking it's a chanterelle. So again, you really need to look at all the features of a mushroom. I recommend going with someone who knows first. Seeing the mushroom in the flesh is really kind of the best way. There's a lot more resources now than when I first started learning. There's some YouTube channels on mushroom hunting that you can watch, and there's different apps, iNaturalist, Mushroom Observer. There's Facebook groups that you can post a mushroom picture on, and you can get feedback from reliable experts. But there's nothing really you can substitute time in the field, seeing the mushroom, getting familiar with it. And once you start seeing it a number of times and like, oh, that's what I look for. I mean, I can walk through the forest and tell you it's a chanterelle from 100 yards just because I'm so ingrained in seeing it.
Well, and it's the right mushroom in the right place. And
exactly.
You start to get those things together.
If you're finding mushrooms growing in a bunch of wood chips, they're probably not chanterelles, right? Because, or a field or something, because again, the chanterelles are mycorrhizal. They have to be in that right habitat. It's where you're going to find them. So.
Yeah. So you do offer through the park, there are programs usually in the fall that are education programs. How do people find out when those are being offered?
Yeah, so we, for the past 20-some years, we've been doing mushroom hikes and mushroom like kind of talks and walks out at Fort Stevens State Park. We usually post those dates on the Oregon State events calendar. Usually like early September, we kind of post the season. We generally, depending on when we get our rain, obviously, September through November is usually the time frame.
Okay.
Like I said, our spring season isn't that great on the coast, so it's all about the fall months for us.
Yeah. So people can just go on that website and...
Yeah, that's the best way to find the dates.
Do you have to sign up in advance?
No, you just show up. We generally meet at Battery Russell or Coffinberry Lake, depending on the program. Just show up. We encourage people to bring mushrooms that they have found and collected, and we can, more the merrier, we can identify what they've been finding. So
that seems like a really good opportunity. Yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate to have mushrooming friends or people mm-hmm. who understand that I would trust that they could ID it or not. So if I found something and wanted to know, but if you're just out there and you're curious about what this mushroom is growing in your yard or that you found on a walk, that would be a great opportunity. I mean, assuming that it lasts.
Yeah.
Because they do decompose pretty quickly.
Yeah, another, the shelf life on a mushroom is not incredibly long. So we are always having to get, fresh ones and new ones and whatnot. And there's other, mycological societies, the Oregon Mycological Society out of Portland, they have monthly meetings, they do forays. Becoming a member of that organization or something, another way you can find out more and expand upon your knowledge. So.
It seems like quite a rabbit hole that you could go down. I think that's maybe also part of why I've been a little resistant to get into mushrooming, because I feel like I could get really into mushrooming. And this time of year, I just don't have time for that, which is, I mean, I'm fortunate to have people bring mushrooms to me, but it is also so fascinating. These organisms, they're so weird. And they're huge. From what I understand, like under the ground, they are enormous.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It would be like a monster tree. If it was a tree above ground, it would be huge.
Yeah, the largest organism on the planet is actually an Oregon. They call it the humongous fungus. It's a armillaria or honey mushroom. It's up in northeastern Oregon, and it's not that the mushrooms are giant; they're normal size, but it's. The organism is basically
underground.
It's the same. They did DNA's test, and it's the same organism on one stump as it is several miles on another stump. So it's this massive.
So miles underground.
Yeah, it's like 2,500 acres or something, a couple thousand years old. And it's one organism that's in the ground or in stumps, basically. It's parasitic on trees. So
that is just mind-blowing. That is really mind-blowing. They're beautiful. They're beautiful. They're delicious. Do you have a favorite way you like to cook mushrooms?
I've got a lot of recipes I like. We brought mushroom cookies for you to try. So there's one type called the candy cap, and they have
These are mushroom cookies.
Yeah, they're mushroom cookies. So you have cashews, so if, I don't know if you have a
nut. No, I'm good with cashews. Oh my God, okay.
So give it a try and tell me what you think it might taste like.
Okay, I'm going in. I'm having a mushroom cookie. Oh, that's good. I don't know that I'm necessarily tasting mushrooms, but...
So the...
What's in this?
So it's a basic cookie recipe, flour, sugar, egg, cashews, and then what gives it that kind of maple-y syrup flavor... Yeah. Are the candy caps.
No maple syrup in this?
There's no maple syrup
Okay, this is really weird because I would have sworn you put maple syrup in this. No? That's the mushroom?
That's and those little bits of brown. It smells like it too. Yeah, no, we...
I would swear there was maple syrup
in this. Yeah, they say that if you eat enough candy caps, your sweat still starts smelling like maple syrup. And then when we made these cookies last Sunday, we did it for the sixth grade forestry days out at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
At the forestry department, I mean. Our crew room smelled like maple syrup for the next week. I think it still smells like maple syrup in there. So it's pretty intense aroma. But yeah, the flavor
so
you're getting from
it. It's a candy cap.
It's called a candy cap. It's a lactarius mushroom. But it shows you that mushrooms aren't just like your pizza mushroom. The flavors range from like sweet maple syrup type. There's one that tastes like seafood, crab, or lobster. It ranges whole spectrum of tastes out there. So
that is amazing. That is really good. That is really good. Wow. Okay. So cookies, and then you can, you know, saute them and put them in an omelet or make a soup out of them or.
Yeah, there's, I mean, the recipes are endless, but yeah, sauteing mushrooms, cooking them, thoroughly. A lot of people, say, I don't like mushrooms. They're kind of slimy, especially wild mushrooms. You really want to dry saute. So cook all the water out of them as much as you can.
So not put any oil in the pan?
Well, cook the water out and then add your oil.
Oh.
And then it will start kind of caramelizing or kind of firming up. And that's where a lot of your flavors really come from. When you're cooking mushrooms, think of more like cooking meat instead of like a vegetable. Like really, you know, get those flavors going into it and it'll be a lot better texture and flavor.
So my mind is completely blown. This has been so fascinating. I think maybe I am going to have to get into mushrooms because this is really great and clearly delicious too. I feel like we could talk for 10 more hours, but sadly our time is up. Dane, thank you so much. This has been fascinating. And again, if people want to find out more about mushrooms and mushrooming here at Fort Stevens State Park,
Just go to the Oregon State Park calendar events and you can find the Fort Stevens tab and we'll have all the dates posted. So
cool. And I absolutely encourage everyone to get out in the autumn and go walk in the woods, come out to Fort Stevens. Definitely take one of these walks and talks and learn a little bit about what you're doing, but connect with these organisms. They are so cool. Just amazing. Thank you so much. This has been great.
It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks to everyone for joining us. In season. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I'll talk to you next time. Thanks.